The early years of King David's rule. 2 Samuel chapter 2, we are on page 49 in the syllabus. And it was a third down situation, and it came to pass after this that David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up into any of the cities of Judah?" And the Lord said unto him, "Sure, why not? You're king." God, you know. And David said, "Whither shall I go up?" And he said, "Go to Hebron." So before he goes anywhere, he finds that Saul is dead. And before he does anything, the first thing he does is he asks God what he should do. He could have demanded the kingdom from the people. You know, God says, "I'm king." There was a proper protocol that needed to be followed. The people had to recognize that he was not self-serving, but was God's actual choice to ascend to the throne. God had chosen Saul previously and had his prophet Samuel declare to the nation his choice. Even then, there were dissenters. David was not in Saul's bloodline, where the usual heir would come from. Thus, the right of kingly succession is one reason why, when God tells him later that his family would rule on the throne forever, that was a huge deal to David. Verse 2. So David went up thither, and his two wives also. Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, Nabal's wife, the Carmelite. And his men that were with them did David bring up, every man with his household, and they dwelt in the cities of Hebron. So he's got 600 men with them, and they've got their families. You know, and they were probably pretty happy to move into a city. David's men had their families with them in hiding. Now that's a large influx of people into Hebron. David, who is 30 years old now, is anointed king over Judah, just one of the tribes of Israel. Usually the tribes of Judah and Benjamin stayed together. However, since Saul was of the tribe of Benjamin, they would stay with the rest of Israel. So verse 4, and the men of Judah came, and there in Hebron they anointed David king over the house of Judah. And they told David, saying, that the men of Jabesh-Gilead were they that buried Saul. And David sent messengers unto the men of Jabesh-Gilead and said unto them, "Blessed be ye of the Lord that you have showed this kindness unto your Lord, even unto Saul, and have buried him. And now the Lord show kindness and truth unto you. And I also will requite you this kindness because you have done this thing. Therefore now let your hands be strengthened, and be you valiant. For your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah has anointed me king over them. But Abner, the son of Ner, the captain of Saul's host," remember he was the one who was sleeping next to him when David wandered in and just took a spear. "He took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and brought him to Mahanaim, and made him king over Gilead, and over the Asherites, and over Jezreel, and over Ephraim, and over Benjamin, and over all Israel. Abner, who had been Saul's military commander for years, appoints Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, as king over the rest of Israel. Usually the eldest son of the king is next in line to be made king. David is the upstart king here, not Ishbosheth according to custom, but not according to God." All right, 2 Samuel 2:10. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 40 years old when he began to reign over Israel, and he reigned 2 years. "But the house of Judah followed David. And the time that David was king in Hebron over the house of Judah was 7 years and 6 months. All right, so now the land is encased in civil war. Joab, David's top general, and Abner, the head of Saul's army, the two top commanders, they feud. And Abner escapes, but he slays Asahel, Joab's brother, while escaping. Abner is the more honorable of the two, though, we will find out. Now, again, I'm going to leave a bunch of segments out. That was just a kind of a quick recap. Basically, Joab tried to trick Abner here, and he escapes. And Asahel is Joab's brother, and he catches him. And Abner, you know, basically says, "I don't want to kill you. Just, soldier, put down your arms." "No." And finally he had no choice and killed him. So there's a lot of segments which are indirectly dealing with David that I have to leave out because of time constraints. So we go to chapter 3, verse 1. 2 Samuel 3:1. "Now there was long war between the house of Saddam, no, between the house of Saul and the house of David. But David waxed stronger and stronger, and the house of Saul waxed weaker and weaker. Gee, I wonder what side God was on. Verse 6. And it came to pass, while there was war between the house of Saul and the house of David, that Abner made himself strong for the house of Saul. Now Abner and Ishbosheth soon have a falling out. So David and Abner agreed to meet in peace to discuss options. As part of his agreement to meet with Abner, David demands his first wife, Saul's daughter, Michal, to be returned to him. Verse 3:12. And Abner sent messengers to David on his behalf, saying, "Whose is the land?" Saying also, "Make thy league with me, and behold, my hand shall be with thee, to bring about all Israel unto thee." And he said, "Well, I will make a league with thee, but one thing I require of thee, that is, thou shalt not see my face, except thou first bring Michal, Saul's daughter, when thou comest to see my face." And David sent messengers to Ishbosheth, Saul's son, saying, "Deliver me my wife, Michal, that which I espoused to me for 100 foreskins of the Philistines." I bought her, man. It cost me 100 foreskins. And Ishbosheth sent, took her from her husband, even from Phalatiel, the son of Laish, and her husband went with her along weeping behind her to Bahurim. Thank you. Then said Abner unto him, "Go, return." And so he turned around and returned. And Abner had communication with the elders of Israel, saying, "You sought for David in times past to be king over you. Now then do it. For the Lord has spoken of David, saying, 'By the hand of my servant David will I save my people Israel out of the hand of the Philistines and out of the hand of all their enemies.' And Abner also spake in the ears of Benjamin, and Abner went about to speak in the ears of David and Hebron, all that seemed good to Israel, and that seemed good to the whole house of Benjamin." So Abner is helping to negotiate a peace treaty. They're going to Camp David, and they're all talking. So Abner came to David in Hebron, and 20 men with him. So Abner shows up with 20 men. And David made Abner and his men there, the men, a big feast. And Abner said unto David, "I will arise and go and will gather all Israel unto my lord the king, that they may make a league with thee, and that thou mayest reign over all thine heart, and all that thy heart desires." And David sent Abner away, and he went away in peace. So David and Abner are working together. Now, Joab enters the picture because he's freaked out, because Joab's the head of his army, and Abner's a much better, more qualified, better, just a better person all the way around, of highest sterling quality, and Joab doesn't want to lose his job. So Joab tricks Abner and slays him without David having knowledge of what he's doing. Basically, Abner drives away, and Joab goes, "All right, send him back, saying David wants to talk to him." So he comes back, and Joab walks up to him, like to kiss him, to greet him, and he had a sword, and he stabs him and kills him.
Jerk.
Absolutely. 3:26. And when Joab was come out from David, he sent messengers after Abner, which brought him again from the well of Sirah, but David knew it not. And when Abner was returned to Hebron, Joab took him aside in the gate to speak with him quietly. "Psst, come here, I got something I want to show you. Let's talk about this." And smote him there under the fifth rib, and he died. But again, Joab's brother, Abner had killed his brother, Ishiel. And afterward, when David heard it, he said, "I and my kingdom are guiltless before the Lord forever from the blood of Abner, the son of Ner. Let it rest on the head of Joab and on all his father's house, and let there not fail from the house of Joab." This is what he's praised to God about. "Let it not fail from the house of Joab for what he has done, that all his children, everybody in the house, either has an issue, is a leper, leans on a staff, falls on a sword, or lacks bread." So basically, David curses Joab and his descendants for his treachery. Here, you got that in your syllabus, 3:29 in the NIV. "May his blood fall upon," it's whirl about. "May his blood whirl about the head of Joab, and upon all his father's house. May Joab's house never be without someone who has a running sore," a person affected with gonorrhea, "or leprosy," you know, "or is leprous, or who leans on or uses a crutch, or who falls or is slain by the sword, or who lacks food, is poverty stricken." That's quite a curse on everybody. All right, back to your Bible, verse 30. So Joab and Abishai, his brother, slew Abner. because he had slain their brother, Ahijah, at Gibeon in the battle. And David said to Joab, I love this, he forces Joab to humble himself, and to all the people that were with him, rent your clothes, gird your, put on sackcloth, mourn for Abner. And King David himself followed the bier. He was the first person there. And they buried Abner in Hebron, and the king lifted up his voice and wept at the grave of Abner, and all the people wept. Joab was the head of his army, but Abner was definitely a more honest, honorable man. So, again, David's actions continue to illustrate his genuine integrity to other people. He had nothing to do with it, and he wept because a good man was murdered for no reason. No real reason, you know. All right, chapter 4, verse 1. And when Saul's son heard that Abner was dead in Hebron, his hands were feeble, and all the Israelites were troubled. Ishbosheth, things weren't going very good for him as it was. Verse 4. And Jonathan, Saul's son, had a son that was lame of his feet, who was 5 years old when the tidings came of Saul and Jonathan out of Jezreel. And his nurse took him up and fled. And it came to pass that she made haste to flee, that she dropped him, that he fell and he became lame. And his name was, all right, Mephibosheth. Mephibosheth. And the sons of Reuben, the Beerothite. Hey, he's a Beerothite. What town's that? Must be in Germany. Milwaukee, yeah, there you go. You got Rahab and Banana. That's great. It's actually Ba'ana. It's Ba'ana. I had to mark out one of the ends here. They went and they came about the heat of the day. So these people went to the house of Ishbosheth, and it was noontime, and he was taking his siesta. And they came thither into the midst of the house, as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him under the fifth rib. And the two brothers ran away. And they came into the house, and For when they came into the house, he lay on his bed in his bedchamber, and they smote him and slew him and beheaded him and took his head and got them away from the plain all night. So they went in, they got on the fifth rib, chopped off his head, took the head and ran. And they brought the head of Ishbosheth unto David to Hebron and said to the king, look, the head of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, your enemy, remember him, which sought thy life, and the Lord hath avenged my lord the king of this day of Saul and all of his seed. Don't thank me now, but you know. And David answered these two and said, as the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity, when one told me, saying, behold, Saul is dead, thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings. How much more when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house, upon his own bed, shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth? And David commanded his young men, and they took him out to the firing squad. But first they cut off his hands, and they cut off the guy's feet, and then they hanged him in the pool in Hebron. But they took the head of Ishbosheth and buried it in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. You see, David never physically attacked the house of Saul. He regarded them as brothers, fellow Israelites. Now, what do we do? Chapter 5, verse 1. Then all the tribes of Israel. Well, let's go make David king. What the heck? So they all showed up in Hebron and they said, behold, we are bone. We are thy bone and thy flesh. Also in time past, when Saul was king over us, thou wast he that leadest thou and broughtest in Israel. And the Lord said to thee, thou shalt feed my people Israel, and thou shalt be a captain over Israel. While the truth that God had already made David king was evidently known throughout all of Israel. Now verse 3, so all the elders of Israel came to the king in Hebron, and King David made a league with them in Hebron before the Lord, and they anointed David king over Israel. David was 30 years old when he began to reign, and he reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over Israel and Judah. 1 Chronicles 11, it's in your syllabus. And David and all Israel went to Jerusalem, which is Jebus, where the Jebusites were, the inhabitants of the land. And the inhabitants of Jebus said to David, "Thou shalt not come hither." Nevertheless, David took the castle, the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. And David said, "Whosoever smites the Jebusites first shall be chief and captain." So Joab, the son of Zeruiah, went first and was chief. Basically, it's in your syllabus here. He went up through the water supply, which is a common way to attack a city. Many cities are built on a hill for protection. The water supply, though, is far below it. You would search for the hidden passageway from the water supply into the city and use it to breach the city. So you'd go up the water supply area. That's how you'd get in. Now, if you go to Megiddo, they got from the top of it, you go down. It's all wooden planks all the way down, so you can walk all the way down to leave the area. You've got that also in Mizpah. If you happen to be in Mizpah next time, it's the same thing. So a couple of those places, they've got the water supply there. You can just walk down through it, and you get a good idea of how they could do stuff like this. All right. So this is the Jebusite city of Jebus. This, when David takes it now, he's going to move his headquarters there, and they're going to rename it Jerusalem. You may have heard of that city. Okay, that's why this is brought up and why this is important. First one in is captain of my host. And, you know, basically, Joab just got out of my way, and he just went right on up and through the water supply and led the charge. And he became the king. I mean, yeah, the head of the king's army. All right, 2 Samuel 5, 9. 2 Samuel 5, 9 says, "So David dwelt in the fort, and he called it the city of David. And David built round about from Milo and inward." Okay, David built a wall around his new capital city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was located on a hill surrounded by three sides by valleys. Later, Solomon and Hezekiah and his son Manasseh will add to its walls. Milo was part of the fortifications of Jerusalem. Some think it was a tower. It means to be full or to fill. Thus, Milo filled in a gap along the fortifications of Jerusalem. So it was kind of like a tower, but it was filled in, and it was right there in the walls. 5:10 says, "And David went on and grew great, and the Lord God of hosts were with him." Okay. Let's get an idea now of what David's mighty men were like. These are the extras, you know, at the end of the movie, and they start running all the extra people. All right, so we'll go through all of the list of his mighty men and see what some of these guys did. So we go to 1 Chronicles 11. I believe you have to look that up, right?
Yeah. Okay.
Now that David is king, we'll be seeing a lot more records from God's viewpoint added in. So it was a big deal for God, because it's in Chronicles, to take Jerusalem, to take the Jebusite city, because that's where God's going to make his home, too. That's where he's going to have the temple built. And we'll see that soon. All right, 1 Chronicles 11, verse 10. All right. "These also are the chief of the mighty men whom David had, who strengthened themselves with him in his kingdom, and with all Israel, to make him king, according to the word of the Lord concerning Israel. And this is the number of the mighty men whom David had." You got Jashubim, a Hakamonite, the chief of the captains. "He lifted up his spear against 300 slain by him at one time." So he took on 300 people, and it wasn't a video game. You know, the Matrix where the guy's knocking everybody, you know, and turns into a video game. All right. He took out 300 people at one time. That's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And after him, of course, was Eleazar. He was the son of Dodo, the Ahohite, who was one of the three mightiest. So these are the three mightiest of the mightiest. This is what would get you. First, there's the second guy. He was with David at Pasdammit, and there the Philistines were gathered together to battle, where was a parcel of ground full of barley, and the people fled from before the Philistines. So they're fighting over the barley. You know, the first one to get the barley can make beer. So they're fighting over the barley, over the food. "And they set themselves in the midst of that parcel and delivered it. and slew the Philistines, and the Lord saved them by a great deliverance. So basically, he became a dog soldier for the barley. He drove a stake in and says, I'm not going anywhere. And he fought the people back. Now, three of the 30 captains went down to the rock to David, into the cave of Adullam, and the host of the Philistines encamped in the valley of Rephaim. And David was then in the hold, and the Philistines' garrison was then in Bethlehem. And David was just pining away and go, oh, man, oh, that one would give me drink of the water of the well of Bethlehem that's at the gate. Just, you know, it's like, oh, I sure would like to have a cold beer from Milwaukee right now or something, you know. Yeah, it's like, you know, from his hometown. I want a Schlitz or something. A Falstaff, maybe? Okay, an old style.
There we go.
And the three break through the host of the Philistines. The whole army, the whole garrison of Philistines were there in Bethlehem. And these three overheard David going, boy, just like a drink from that water. And the three break through the host of the Philistines and drew water out of the well of Bethlehem that was by the gate, and they took it and brought it to David. But David would not drink of it, but poured it out unto the Lord. And said, oh my God, forbid it me that I should do this thing. Shall I drink the blood of these men that put their lives in jeopardy? For with the jeopardy of their lives they brought it. Therefore he would not drink it. These things did these three mightiest. You know, he was just going, oh, I'd be nice. And these guys decided to take him literally. You know, there's no way he would allow those guys to risk their lives or something like that. Abishai, the brother of Joab, he was chief of the three. For lifting his spear up against 300, he slew them, and he had a name among the three. Of the three, he was more honorable than the two, for he was their captain. Howbeit, he attained not to be the first three. So we saw the first three, now this is the second three. All right. Benaiah, the son of Jehoiada, the son of a valiant man of Kabzeel, who had done many acts. He slew two lion-like men of Moab. Also, he went down and slew a lion in a pit in a snowy day. Yeah, let's have some fun. He jumps in a pit with a lion on a snowy day and takes him out. Really. And he slew an Egyptian, a man of great stature, 5 cubits high. And in the Egyptian's hand was a spear like a weaver's balm. You know, it had an extra long rod. And he went down to him with a staff, and he plucked the spear out of the Egyptian's hand and slew him with his own spear. Now, remember, Goliath was 6 cubits and a span tall, and this Egyptian was only 5 cubits high. He was either, 7.3 feet tall or 8.5 feet tall, depending on which cubit was used. So anyway, between 7 and 8 feet tall. He walked up to the guy, slapped him, grabbed the spear, and took him out. That's how he made the list. You can see these guys were special forces because they did it with their hands rather than, other weaponry. Now, 1 Chronicles 11. You have this in your syllabus. 1 Chronicles 11:24 from the New International Version. Such were the exploits of Benaiah, son of Jehoiada. He too was as famous as the three mighty men. He was held in greater honor than any of the 30, but he was not included among the three. And David put him in charge of his bodyguard. Now this guy is going to be the guy David is going to send on certain secretive missions later. Benaiah becomes David's personal bodyguard. He becomes the head of the secret service. 1 Chronicles 11:26, you have that in your syllabus. Also, the valiant men of the armies were Azahel, the brother of Joab. So he was the one with the real fast cure that Abner took out. All right. And look who else is included in this list as a valiant man in David's army in verse 41. This name will come up later. His name is Uriah the Hittite. He was one of David's 33 mightiest of the mighty. Yeah. That makes it worse. Mm-hmm. All right, 1 Chronicles 12. Do you have that, or you got to go look that up? Look it up?
Yeah, look that one
up. All right, let's look 1 Chronicles 12 up.
So far away.
Now, these are they that came to David to Ziklag. While he yet kept himself close because of Saul, the son of Kish, and they were among the mighty men helpers of the war. They were armed with bows, and they could use both the right hand and the left hand in hurling. It was more of an insult if you hit somebody, you know, when you threw something with your left hand, or you took them out the left sword, it was the hand of cursing. So they would train themselves extra hard to be, you know, where they could use both just as equally ambidextrous with weapons. So they could hurdle stones and shoot arrows, right-handed and left-handed. It's whatever side of the horse they were on, you know. In the westerns, they could do it both ways. All right. Verse 8. And of the Gadites, there separated themselves unto David into the hold of the wilderness, men of might, men of war, fit for battle. They could handle shield and buckler, whose faces were like the faces of lions, and they were swift as the roes upon the mountains. These are your early warriors. Verse 15 says, these are they that went over Jordan the first month, when it had overflown all its banks. And they put to flight all them of the valleys, both toward the east and towards the west. So these guys crossed the river at flood stage in order to surprise attack the enemy. And they didn't do it with Washington in a boat across the Potomac. They came across themselves at nighttime to attack. All right, 1 Chronicles 12, 16. And there came of the children of Benjamin and Judah to the hold unto David. And David went out to meet them and answered and said to them, if you become peaceably unto me to help me, my heart shall be knit unto you. But if you become to betray me to my enemies, seeing there is no wrong in my hands, the God of our fathers look upon and rebuke it. Then the Spirit came upon Amasai, who was the chief of the captains, and he said, thine are we, David. So these are the ones from the tribe of Benjamin. These are the warriors from Benjamin who had served under Saul. Thine are we, David, on thy side, thou son of Jesse. Peace. Peace unto thee. Live long and prosper. And peace be to thy helpers, for thy God helpeth thee. Then David received them, and David put them in the army. He made them captains. He made them officers in his army. These were basically people who had been fighting against, who had been following Saul. But he understood, you know, they were soldiers. They were doing what they were ordered to do. Verse 21. And they helped David against the band of the rovers, you know, armed marauders. For they were all mighty men of valor. They're already trained warriors. And they were captains in the host. You know, many of them were officers in the army. For at that time, day by day, there came to David to help him until he had a great host, the host of God. So David's militia was growing daily with experienced fighters. Captain America joined them, the Hulk, you know, they're just, you know, all just, you know, Batman, they're, you know.
Thor.
Oh, yeah, I got to include Thor. Yeah, all right. Experienced fighters. 1 Chronicles 12, 33 says, and this is in your syllabus, of Zebulun, such as went forth to battle. They were expert in war. They were well drilled for battle. With all instruments of war, they were armed with every kind of weapon. They knew every kind of ninja instrument, you know, hi-ya, take people out. 50,000 of them showed up, which could keep rank. In other words, they were fully armed. They were not of double heart, which meant, you know, you couldn't buy them. They had undivided loyalty to David. So you had 50,000 from the tribe of Zebulun, skilled warriors show up. Nice! Nice! You can see why David's going to start cleansing the land of Philistines. All right, also in your syllabus, 1 Chronicles 12, 38. All these were fighting men who volunteered to serve in the ranks. They came to Hebron, fully determined to make David king over all Israel. All the rest of the Israelites were also of one mind to make David king. The men spent 3 days there with David, eating and drinking, for their families had supplied provisions for them. Also their neighbors from as far away as Issachar, Zebulun, and Naphtali, which is all the way up north, came. They brought food on donkeys. You know, they brought their little meal trucks. Camels, mules, oxen. There were plentiful supplies of flour, fig cakes, raisin cakes, wine, oil, cattle, Dunkin' Donut, sheep. And there was joy in Israel, a three-day feast. Well, after Saul's rule, when David was made king, wouldn't there, you'd think there'd be absolute joy in Israel? We finally got rid of that tyrant. David, you know, David's quite a bit different, isn't he? All right, we go back to 2 Samuel 5 in our Bibles. And we'll see what happens next. 2 Samuel 5, 11. And Hiram, king of Tyre, sent messengers to David. And he sent them cedar trees and carpenters and masons. And they built David a house. And David perceived that the Lord had established or confirmed him king over Israel. And that he exalted his kingdom for his people Israel's sake. So what do you do? David, you're now king of all Israel. You've got a great big army. Everybody's on your side. What do you do? So David took him more concubines and wives out of Jerusalem. He didn't take them from Egypt. He didn't take them from Moab. He didn't take them from pagan nations, as we're going to see Solomon tomorrow morning did. So he got some concubines and he got some wives after he was come from Hebron. And there were yet sons and daughters born to David. And in Appendix B in David, is David's family lineage, which lists a lot of the wives and the children and all that. So you have that in the back of your syllabus. So now, 2 Samuel 5:17. But when the Philistines heard that they had anointed David king over all Israel, all the Philistines came up to seek David. And David heard of it, and he went down to the hold. The Philistines also came and spread themselves in the valley of Rephaim. And David inquired of the Lord, saying, "Shall I go up to the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into my hand?" And the Lord said unto David, "Go up, for I will doubtless deliver the Philistines into thy hand." So David came to Baal-perazim, and David smote them there, and said, "The Lord has broken forth upon my enemies before me as the breach of waters," like breaking water. They just, it's like breaking water. They ran. Therefore, he called the name of the place Baal-perazim. And there they left their images, and David and his men put them in the house of their gods. Oh, no, 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 he did not. That got a lot of people in, you know, a lot of problems before. He burnt them. They honored the first two commandments by ridding the kingdom of false idols. They didn't keep them around. They got rid of them. They destroyed them. Well, you know, time of civil war is ended. David's the new king. If you're the enemy, what are you going to do? Let's attack. Let's see how strong this guy is. Let's see if people are going to follow him. And so that's immediately what they did. They got their butts kicked, but, you know, that was one of the times to come. All right, 1 Chronicles 14. We'll continue with the record there. So we're going to be going back and forth, obviously, between Kings and Chronicles. I mean, Samuel and Chronicles now. 1 Chronicles 14:12. And when they had left their gods there, they ran away and left their gods. David gave a command, and they were burned with fire. And the Philistines yet again spread themselves abroad in the valley. Therefore, David inquired again of God. And God said unto him, "Go not up after them." It's a good thing he didn't follow all the same practices, like he's always done. Go, go, go. Now this time God says, "Don't go. Turn away from them, and come upon them over against the mulberry trees. And it shall be, when thou shalt hear a sound of going in the tops of the mulberry trees, then thou shalt go to the battle. For God has gone forth before thee to smite the host of the Philistines." God's a pretty good military tactician here. David therefore did as God commanded him. And they smote the host of the Philistines from Gibeon and even unto Gezer. And the fame of David went out to all the lands, and the Lord brought the fear of him upon all nations. They kept coming, he kept wiping them out and using different tactics. And finally people went, "We're running out of men. I think we ought to stop this." So that's what he did. So basically, you know, this time it was, "Don't go at them. Wait. Go around there. Wait. Now get them." All right. 1 Chronicles 13. Big, big event. And David consulted with the captains of thousands and hundreds and with every leader. And David said unto all the congregation of Israel, "If it seem good unto you that it be of the Lord our God, let us send abroad unto our brethren everywhere that are left in all the land of Israel, and with them also to the priests and the Levites which are in their cities and suburbs, that they may gather themselves unto us. And let us bring again the ark of our God to us. For he inquired not at it in the days of Saul." So the whole time Saul was king, he didn't go over and ask, talk to God where the ark was. So it's been sitting there for 40 years. So as soon as he could, David went to bring the Ark of the Covenant, God's dwelling place, back home. David then, remember, he let everybody know. He wanted all of Israel to rejoice with him in bringing the Ark up. It was a big deal. And notice we're reading in Chronicles, God's viewpoint. This is a big deal to God. 1 Chronicles 13:4 now. And all the congregation said that, let's do it, for the thing was right in the eyes of all the people. So David gathered all Israel together, from Shehor of Egypt, even unto the entering of Hemath, to bring the Ark of God from that place. And David went up in all Israel to Baalah, that is Kirjath-Jearim, which belongeth to Judah, to bring up thence the Ark of God the Lord, that dwelleth between the cherubims, whose name is called on it. And they carried the Ark of God in a brand new Mercedes, in a new cart. They carried the Ark of God in a new cart out of the house of Abinadab. And Uzzah and Ahio drave the cart. Stop. Notes. Did God tell them to build a new cart for the Ark?
No.
No is the correct answer. David thought he was doing God a favor by adding to what God had originally designed. Andrew, what does Exodus 25:14 say in your syllabus?
And thou shalt put the staves into the rings by the side of the ark, and the ark may be borne, carried with them.
So you're to carry the ark. All right, Timothy, Exodus 39.
According to all that the Lord commanded Moses, so the children of Israel made all the work. And Moses did look upon all the work, and behold, they had done it as the Lord had commanded. Even so had they done it, and Moses blessed them.
Right. All of the construction of the ark and how it was to be carried, everything else was done according to God's specifications to God's people. Susanna, Exodus 40.
Yes, sir. And he brought the ark into the tabernacle, and set up the veil of the covering, and covered the ark of the testimony, as the Lord commanded Moses.
Good. All right, Julie, Numbers 8.
I have given the Levites as a gift to Aaron and to his sons from among the children of Israel, and to do the service of the children of Israel in the tabernacle of the congregation, and to make an atonement for the children of Israel, that there be no plague among the children of Israel, when the children of Israel come nigh into the sanctuary.
All right. The Levites were supposed to take care of it. All right. Matthew, Numbers 4:15, please.
And when Aaron and his sons had made an end of covering the sanctuary and all the vessels of the sanctuary, as the camp is to set forward, after that the sons of Kohath shall come to bear it, but they shall not touch any holy thing, lest they die. These things are the burden of the sons of Kohath in the tabernacle of the congregation.
Right, Kohath was one of the three sons of Levi. Gershon, Merari were his other two sons, and Kohath. And Kohath was the second son. Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. They were all given certain specifics on how and what to do with the movement of the tabernacle. All right, number 7:7-9. Russell, if you could read that, please.
Two wagons and four oxen he gave unto the sons of Gershon, according to their service. And four wagons and eight oxen he gave unto the sons of Merari, according unto their service, under the hand of Ithamar, the son of Aaron the priest. But unto the sons of Kohath he gave none, because the service of the sanctuary belonging unto them was that they should bear upon their shoulders.
Good. The ark was to be carried on the shoulders of the children of Kohath only. Thus he had no need for wagons, so they didn't give him any. The other sons got it because they had to carry other things. But you got the ark? The ark is to be carried at all time. No carts given. Oh, we're starting to see a pattern here. And we're also starting to see there's going to be a problem shortly. Back to 1 Chronicles 13. 1 Chronicles 13:8. And David and all Israel played before God with all their might, and with singing and harps and psalteries and timbrels, with cymbals and with trumpets and with the electric guitars. And when they were come into the threshing floor of Chidon, Urzah put forth his hand to hold up the ox for the oxen. Urzah put forth his hand to hold the ark, for the oxen stumbled. And the anger of the Lord was kindled against Uzzah, and he smote him, because he put his hand to the ark, and there he died before God. Uzzah was just trying to help God out. He didn't think God could do the whole thing on his own. So Uzzah tried to hold up God. 13:11. And David was displeased, because the Lord had made a breach upon Uzzah. And David, verse 12, was afraid of God that day, saying, how shall I bring up the ark of God home to me? David was afraid because he's yelling at God. You know, you could yell at God in the Old Testament. Sometimes lightning shows up. All right, 13:13. So David brought not the ark home to himself, to the city of David, but he carried it aside into the house of Obed-Edom, the Gittite. And the ark of God remained with the family of Obed-Edom in this house 3 months. And the Lord blessed the house. Remember, it was when it was Dagon's house, it kept knocking Dagon off, and the hemorrhoids showed up and all that. But because this is a, you know, basically a believer, he prospered. And it says that God blessed his house and all that he had, man. Every stock he bought, man, went up. Everything was going right for this guy because the ark was there. All right, 2 Samuel 6. And you can see why Uzzah died, because there wasn't supposed to be a cart, nobody was supposed to touch it. All right, 6:12. And it was told King David, saying, the Lord has blessed the house of Obed-Edom and all that pertaineth unto him because of the ark of God. So David went and brought up the ark of God from the house of Obed-Edom into the city of David with gladness. And it was so that when they bare the ark of the Lord, and they went 6 paces, he sacrificed oxen and fatlings. You watch the baseball game, a batter steps out after every pitch and redoes his glasses, grabs his hand, all that. Every 6 steps, man, they stop and offer sacrifices. It's going to take a long time to get the ark. But so what? We're bringing God home. You know, the representation of God. All right. And David danced before the Lord with all his might. And David was girded with a linen ephod. So David and all the house of Israel brought up the ark of the Lord with shouting with the sound of the trumpet. Now, the book of Chronicles has a much larger recording than the book of Samuel, because this is an extremely huge deal in the eyes of God. So let's go to 1 Chronicles 15. Here's just a few lines about bringing it up. Now we're going to read quite a bit more about bringing the ark up. And this time they're going to get it there. 1 Chronicles 15, verse 1. And David made him houses in the city of David, and prepared a place for the ark of God, and pitched for it a tent. And David said, none ought to carry the ark of God but the Levites. Oh, he's learned his lesson. For them hath the Lord chosen to carry the ark of God and to minister unto him forever. So David did a little research this time before trying to bring the ark up. He's going to do it God's way this time. Before, David was trying to honor man, his accomplishments, not giving the glory to the true God. I'm going to bring the ark up. It's going to be my big accomplishment. And we'll get a new cart. We'll do it my way. And then catastrophe. Okay, God, how should we do it your way? All right, 15:3. And David gathered all Israel together to Jerusalem to bring the ark of the Lord into his place, which he had prepared for it. And David assembled the children of Aaron and the Levites. Verse 11. David called for Zadok and Abiathar the priests, for the Levites, the top Levites. And he said unto them, you are the chief of the fathers of the Levites. Sanctify yourselves, both you and your brethren, that you may bring up the ark of the Lord God of Israel unto the place that I prepared for it. For because you did it not at the first, the Lord our God made a breach upon us, for that we sought him not after the due order. We didn't do it his way. So the priests and Levites sanctified themselves to bring up the ark of the Lord God of Israel. And the children of the Levites bear the ark of God upon their shoulders with the staves thereon, as Moses commanded according to the word of the Lord. We'll bring it up properly. How many of you would like that job? You get to help carry the ark of the covenant up. Every Levite who could would be, yeah, I'll do it. Heck yeah. Now, what's a party without music, right? All right, 1 Chronicles 15, verse 16. And David spake to the chief of the Levites to appoint their brethren to be the singers with instruments of music, psalteries and harps and cymbals sounding by lifting up the voice with joy. So the Levites appointed Heman, the son of Joel, and of his brother Asaph. Asaph wrote many of the Psalms recorded in the Bible. Earlier, God individually listed and described the mighty men of war and many of their heroics. Here, he individually lists the musicians and what their skill sets were. So I can't leave the musicians out. I can't just read the warriors and leave the musicians. So let's read a couple things about some of the musicians. So we go to 19, 1 Chronicles 15, 19 in your syllabi, because it's from the NIV version. The musicians, Heman, Asaph, and Ethan, they were to sound the bronze cymbals. So what does bronze cymbal sound like? I don't know. Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. All right. So that's what those guys were going to do. Then Zechariah, all these other people here, they were to play the lyres, according to Alamoth. Okay. I kept trying to figure out exactly what was Alamoth. And the best I can come up with, it's a kind of a tune or harmony in music. It may be, and it's referred to in other places as like the female voice or treble. So maybe it's the women segment of it. All right. According to Alamoth, it's a certain tune or harmony of you know, the sopranos, you know, the female voices, basically. And then list a whole bunch of these other people going to play the harp, but these guys are going to do it according to Sheminith. And this is the bass. This is the octave in music. It's the lowest and gravest notes of the scale sung by men, so modern day bass. So you've got the treble, you know, and the ladies' potential choir, the harmony, and then you've got the bass here. So you got two different style of singing when they bring up the ark. It's not just all men style. All right, and then you got Kenny Nea. Maybe that was Kenny G. He was the head Levite, and he was in charge of the singing. That was his responsibility because he was skillful at it. So he was the lead singer of the band. All right? And then these two other guys, they were to be doorkeepers for the ark because they couldn't sing. So they took it.
All right.
They were the bouncers, really. All right. Then they list all these other people that were priests, and their job was to blow the trumpets before the ark of God. And Obed-Edom and Jehiah, well, they were also to be doorkeepers. Whose house was that in? So they were also doorkeepers for the ark. In the procession, here comes the Levite choir, then Alamoth, the maiden's choir, the treble. Then bringing up the rear of the procession was the Sheminith, the men's choir, the bass. So you had the altos and all of that coming first, and that, and then all the way at the end. You know, hasten, glad, and free. You know, got that, those guys there, you know, at the end of it. So, all right. 1 Chronicles 15, 25. So we're bringing up the ark, and man, we got the music. We've got it together this time. 1 Chronicles 15, 25. So David and the elders of Israel and the captains over thousands went to bring up the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of the house of Obed-Edom with joy. He's not one of the doorkeepers. And it came to pass, when God helped the Levites that bear the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, that they offered seven bullocks and seven rams. And David was clothed with a robe of fine linen. So he opens up with, he's got a nice robe, fine linen, nice fold. I don't know what time of the year it is. But he's got a robe of fine linen on to start with. And all the Levites bear the Ark and the singers. And Chenaniah, the master of the song with the singers. I wonder if they're singing Motown. David also had upon him an ephod of linen that was under his robe. Thus all Israel brought up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord with shouting, with the sound of the cornet, with the trumpets, the cymbals, making a noise with psalteries and harps. And it came to pass, as the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came to the city of David, that Michal, the daughter of Saul, looking out at the window, saw King David dancing and playing, and she despised him in her heart. Now, the book of Samuel is going to dwell with this little part, this little human side of all of this, but first let's take a break.